Wham! Bam! Body slam! You're listening to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, right here on JitteryMonkey.com. Now here's your host, Kevin Huntsperger. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 9 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, here on JitteryMonkey.com or iTunes. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out. I got a guest with me today, an old friend of mine. You've heard him here before. You've read his blogs over at my123cents.com, Chad Smart. Chad, thanks so much for joining us. This is our post-Royal Rumble show. We are literally talking minutes after the Royal Rumble ended, the 2015 Royal Rumble, and we'll dig deep into this, but if you were going to give me a one or two word assessment of the Royal Rumble this year, what would you say?
The show itself was a two-match show. Nothing on the undercard was really that exciting, but the title match made up for that, and then the Rumble itself was, I guess the word I would use is predictable and disappointing.
Okay.
But I'm not going to be as negative as probably a lot of long-time viewers and readers think I'm going to be. I actually do have positive things to discuss.
Okay, good. And just for time's sake, because I think we could probably sit here and pick apart the Rumble match itself for the entire length of this podcast, let's not spend a whole lot of time talking about the undercard. It was what it was, but that title match, to me, was probably one of the more intense WWE title matches that we've seen in quite some time, and Brock Lesnar, my God, is a beast. That's how they built him, and they really have made him even more of a beast than I thought was ever possible.
Yeah, and you know, I think the good thing about that title match tonight was you really had no idea who was going to win. Conceivably, all three of those guys could have walked out as champion heading into WrestleMania. There were storylines in place for any of them, should, you know, whoever WWE wanted to choose to win. But I think Brock retaining is probably the best scenario, and I'm curious to see what the build-up going into WrestleMania is going to be like. But like you said, I mean, after that match, my thought, and I tweeted on the My 1-2-3 Cents Twitter account, was this was a star-making performance for Seth Rollins. I think anybody that doesn't see the potential in him now is just either just really biased towards him or is not looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But at the very start, before the match even started, John Cena comes out, and of course the crowd is chanting "Cena sucks" along with the to the rhythm or to the beat of his entrance. And JBL said, and I find that they do this a lot, whenever a crowd is anti-Cena right off the bat, they're always described as a unique crowd. And I don't think booing Cena or chanting "Cena sucks" is unique anymore. I think it happens at every big event they have, and even on Raw now. So, I mean, I don't get the whole... I understand why they haven't turned him heel, because obviously he is still the face of the company and is doing good out there. I don't get this whole not wanting to admit that the crowd doesn't like John Cena, though.
You know, I'm trying to think how I'm going to respond to that, because I'm thinking later in the match when Cena gave the attitude adjustment to both Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, I wasn't paying attention to the commentary because I had my fill of the commentary on the pre-show. But I think I'm guessing they probably said something about how amazing it was that Cena had done this, even though, you know, at WrestleMania 25, I believe it was, he gave the AA to both Big Show and Edge at the same time.
Right.
So again, there is something in the commentary where it's very kind of in a bubble where every show is an individual and they don't. I don't want to say this. It's something that I actually started writing about in a blog about last week's Raw, about how each show, if taken individually, is fine, but when you put them into the context of a serial episode, that's where all the logic falls apart, and I think that's what you're getting at, where they just tend to focus only on tonight and not the overall picture of what's going on in their company. But yeah, I don't know why the announcers don't want to, can't just say, hey, you know what? Cena appeals to a very specific demographic. Because after the match was over with, one of our friends on Facebook commented that his six-year-old niece was crying because Cena had lost. But that's the demographic that Cena appeals to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. And I agree. I don't think turning Cena heel would actually be a good thing or a bad thing. I think it would, given the way that they present Cena, it would just be Cena. There's no difference in that presentation. But, and I'm kind of rambling here. It's just, I think that you're right. The announcers need to just kind of be more honest.
Yeah,
I guess is in the learn.
And I don't want to take away from the title match because it was phenomenal, but you brought up a point about the announcers, and I do want to mention this because you said it on Twitter, and some other folks said it on Twitter. To me, you know, they're throwing out all these stats from the previous Royal Rumbles. Big John Studd was number 27 and won the event back in 1989. R-Truth and The Miz start the Royal Rumble match off, and there's not one mention that 3 years ago, these guys main evented Survivor Series against John Cena and The Rock. You know, these two were a cohesive tag team at one point. I don't think they ever held the titles, but they were a tag team that main evented a pay-per-view together as a tag team, but there was no mention of that, but we're getting all these other stats and statistics and whatnot thrown out at us. So, you know, that, and I know that they're essentially puppets out there being told what to say a lot of the time, I think probably most of the time. But it's little things like that that kind of come up from time to time that you're like, okay, why aren't we acknowledging some of the past, but, you know, there are other things that we are remembering and acknowledging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's more of the entertainment aspect of WWE as opposed to the sports aspect. Because if you watch, you know, the NFL playoffs have been going on, the Super Bowl is next week. If you watch those games, the announcers will probably bring up statistics involving players that have played together on other teams or, you know, in college together. But WWE and really most wrestling companies tend to not pay attention to the history of their own wrestlers. And I think that's something that should be more incorporated because it would help give depth to a storyline.
Totally agree with that.
I'm not even going to mention how well Chikara does that on commentary. I'm going to do completely unbiased Chikara praising for this podcast.
Yeah, we'll save that for another show. Was there anything else, because I'm jumping around here, was there anything else about the title match? You know, Brock Lesnar, again, to me, he was my pick for 2014 Wrestler of the Year, even though he's a part-timer. He is a beast. He dominated, not particularly this match, but he has dominated so many other times and just kind of came back out of nowhere and just threw those guys around like they were nothing. Once again, any final thoughts on the title match?
Well, yeah, and then even the talking about dominating, when I believe it was Rollins jumped off the top rope and Brock caught him for an F5, it's just, Brock is such an anomaly in the wrestling world that I think they're using him correctly as the beast that could get. He's kind of what the show actually should be.
Mm-hmm.
But the title match itself is a. No, I think it was a, you know, probably an early candidate for WWE Match of the Year. And I think all three guys came out looking strong. And I think not having seen a win was the best outcome. And I'm curious now what Seth Rollins is going to do with that Money in the briefcase. When is that going to come into play?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
When he finally cashes in. The Royal Rumble match itself, traditionally, is my favorite match. The Royal Rumble pay-per-view is my favorite pay-per-view, and I love the match itself, the Royal Rumble concept. Let's talk real quick about the surprise entrance. I think it's fair to say I had avoided social media, or tried to avoid social media for most of the day, but saw that The Rock was in Philadelphia. WWE tweeted a picture of Rock and his mom out, so you knew that he was there. There were some implications that he would be in the match. He was not, obviously, but Bubba Ray Dudley, The Boogeyman, and Diamond Dallas Page, all three making their returns. I'm assuming these were all just one-spot deals. Although Bubba Ray Dudley kind of impressed me at the beginning there, eliminating both the Miz. I think he eliminated both The Miz and R-Truth. What are your thoughts on these surprise entrants? Because I'll admit, I did get goosebumps when Bubba Ray did come out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, given Bubba Ray's, or Bully Ray's, past few years in TNA, I would not be opposed to see him come back to WWE on a full-time basis. If he could go back to that character. I think the Bubba Ray Dudley character is, should stay in the past. But I understand if this was a one-off appearance in Philadelphia, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the three, he would be the one that I would like to see back full-time. DDP being in there was, I guess it was nice. You know, both you and I are on the DDP yoga bandwagon, so... we'll give a shout out to DDP for coming and looking good. Boogeyman, that's one of those ones where I just question some of the surprise appearances, because I don't know of anybody watching who, if you made them, had them list their top five potential surprise people, I don't think anybody would have said Boogeyman, and it really didn't. I think the only reason he was there is people could say Eater of Worlds versus Eater of Worms. other than that, there's no long lasting impact. You know, at least when like Mick Foley, when he was in a few years ago, you had the Sacco versus Cobra segment between he and Santino. The Boogeyman, I don't think, added anything to the match, and I think it was just a And I've never been a fan of the Boogeyman, so of course I'm going to be biased that
sure.
I don't want to see him back. But yeah, that one made me scratch my head a little bit.
Well, and you talk about those moments, those Royal Rumble moments, and Kofi Kingston, through the last few years at least, has been impressive in avoiding elimination. This year I felt like they were like, oh, we've got to do something with him. I guess having the Rosebuds catch him and walk him around to the other side and put him back in was... it did its purpose, I guess, but I didn't feel that magic, if you will, that we felt.
Yeah, it wasn't as shocking.
What's that?
It wasn't as shocking.
No. That's true.
This afternoon, I actually watched last year's Royal Rumble again, and you remember last year he was thrown out and caught by Rusev, who was making his debut in the Rumble, and Rusev put him on the barricade and gave him a bunch of knees to the ribs, and then Kofi ran off the barricade and jumped back onto the ring. That was an impressive feat. This just felt like, I mean, it's something that you've seen in the early days of Adam Rose.
Yes.
It didn't even register to me that Kofi had been thrown out until he put him back on the apron, because like I said, it wasn't that magical. It wasn't that special.
Yeah.
But again, it's an ongoing gimmick, and how long can you let it go for? Especially when that's pretty much the only thing Kofi is known for these days.
Unfortunately, that's true. Yeah, unfortunately, you're right about that. Two guys who were in the match relatively early on, Bray Wyatt and Rusev. Impressive to me. Bray Wyatt was the pick to win. By the way, I never did get your official pick. Who did you have originally picked to win the Royal Rumble, Chad?
It would have been Reigns or Bryan, just because Reigns has been the odds-on favorite for the past few months, but with Bryan making the surprise return, I think a Brock-Bryan match would have been interesting for me. I probably would have gone with Reigns. Not because I want him to, but just because that's how I felt that they were going.
Right, and I had Reigns picked all the way up until Bryan announced his return, and then myself and I think a lot of fans very disappointed And again, I'm not going to cast judgment. We're going to try to keep this as positive a podcast as possible. I'm not going to cast a whole lot of judgment because you know, people were disappointed last year too, and we ended up at WrestleMania. And I know that there were some things that happened back behind the scenes that changed the course of WrestleMania for last year. But, you know, Daniel Bryan's elimination kind of sucked the air out of the crowd, I thought, this year. What did you think when he got eliminated?
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought they would build him up until, you know, probably one of the last five or six guys in the ring if he wasn't going to win. I can understand why they got him out early, because I think it would have been more a more negative crowd reaction had he been one of the final four or five and got eliminated. So you take him out before Reigns comes in, and you kind of get the fans accepting of the eventual outcome. But Bryan is just one of those guys that the crowd has taken to, and I'm curious if WWE will. I think he could be the new face of the company for the next couple of years. And I think they're going, and maybe rightfully so. I don't know how bad his injury was or still is, and so it may not be that effective to make him a focal point. But I think the transition time to move Cena out and move someone else in, I think Bryan would be the perfect transitional face until you get another permanent face of the company.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I think that Daniel Bryan is to me the guy who has, you know, proven himself time and time again. He has, risen to the occasion with every single, what some have called silly or outlandish or degrading gimmicks that they've come up for him. The 18-second title loss at WrestleMania 28, whatever they've kind of thrown in his direction, he has risen above it. And I think he'll continue to do that. And I don't know that some folks think that there's a conspiracy against Bryan. I just think that he's a guy who rolls with the punches, and he gets into that underdog role and he plays it off so well. And you're right. I do think that a Daniel Bryan, Brock Lesnar underdog matchup would have been a great story to tell this year, but unfortunately it wasn't. And my ultimate dream, if you will, or my pick for this year, my fantasy booking, was that an NXT guy enters the Rumble and wins it this year. And I was kind of disappointed that we didn't have that, but we had three of these legends return, if you will, and get in there.
I was
so,
just thinking about the same thing.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that. It was kind of surprising that there was no NXT star. I guess the Ascension being on the show gave us our NXT talent. But, I think they could have done more, especially with some of the guys that were in the Rumble, like, and no offense to these guys, but guys like Zack Ryder, Titus O'Neil, you know, guys that really haven't done anything lately on the main roster and didn't do much in the match. They could have maybe brought in an NXT person and kind of gave them a little bit of elevation. But then I guess Titus had to fill that role of guy who gets eliminated in 2 seconds. That seems to be an yearly thing.
Yeah.
So it's better to go with someone who's already seen as a lower card guy than someone new.
Is it fair to say, and I'm applying logic here, Curtis Axel technically was never eliminated from the Royal Rumble? Because Eric Rowan was not a part of the Royal Rumble matchup, technically speaking. If you go by what the storyline is, he was eliminated in both of his chances to get in there. So just because he beat up a guy who was supposed to be in there, that doesn't mean you get their spot, or maybe it does. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, because I had made a comment on Twitter during that Curtis Axel had just got Nunzio'd. And I'm trying to think of which Rumble it was, maybe around 2002, 2003, where Nunzio was backstage and somebody who wasn't in the Rumble attacked him, took him out, and took his spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if they'll just say Rowan took his spot and thus eliminated Axel, or, well, it's Curtis Axel. They're not going to acknowledge that he even exists until the next time he's on NXT. So I don't think it's anything to focus on, because it was probably forgotten 10 seconds after Rowan got eliminated.
Yes. Yes. I don't think that they'll ever make anything of it. It's just an interesting thing that a lot of folks online were talking about. Bray Wyatt looked strong early on. He was number three or four into the matchup? He was towards the beginning of it, eliminated a handful of people, including his former Wyatt family members, the Boogeyman, Sin Cara, Zack Ryder, and then the shocking one there, Daniel Bryan. Rusev also very strong, eliminating DDP, Fandango, Adam Rose, Kofi Kingston, Miz Dow, and Big E. They both eliminated six guys. But Kane is the one that comes in and breaks Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels' record. And I want to get your views on this, because, I don't mind records being broken by any means. But when it's a guy who's been around for almost 20 years, I don't necessarily see what the rub of that was for Kane to have him beat Shawn Michaels' record. I would have liked to have seen maybe someone else build up to that over the next few years, whether it be Rusev or Bray Wyatt or even Roman Reigns.
Yeah, well, I think you could still do that. I think it made sense for Kane to break it, because he was only one person behind HBK going into this Rumble. And I think if you have him come in, and I don't know how long he's going to continue to wrestle, but let's say he's there for another 2-3 years. If he continues to enter the Rumble and doesn't eliminate anybody, I think that seems kind of awkward. And I was wondering, too, because he and Big Show eliminated several people together, if he was getting full credit for eliminations, or if it's like sacks in football where he would get half a credit. So maybe he only eliminated 1.5 people in this Rumble to still break the record. But I think going forward, someone will eventually break Kane's record if someone has longevity in WWE. But I'm fine with Kane having that record. As you said, he's been around for 20 years. I believe he holds the record for the most consecutive Royal Rumbles appearances. So it kind of makes sense that he would be the one to hold that record.
Yeah, when you explain it like that, it does make more sense. And we're kind of getting, again, we're going to kind of jump around with this, and I apologize, but we're getting to that final four moment, or I guess final five technically, towards the end there, where Big Show and Kane. What's that?
Let me interrupt you real quick, because I want to talk about Bray Wyatt for a second.
Okay, sure.
Bray, like you said, was very dominant. He had kind of the CM Punk role this year of being in the ring by himself a lot of the time. And I was kind of hoping that the lights would go out, and then Undertaker would show up, and then he and Bray would fight a little bit and eliminate each other, thus setting up their rumored WrestleMania match, if that's going to be the case. I'm kind of curious to see where Bray will end up at Mania, because there really wasn't anything kind of hinted at going forward with him. And as far as he and Luke Harper and Aaron fighting amongst themselves, it really didn't have the impact that I think, to me anyway, that I think WWE was hoping for, because I still don't know why these guys broke up to begin with, and I don't know why there's no communication between the three. And so it just felt like, oh, look, these guys were all together at one point. Wouldn't it be cool if they fight each other?
They never really did explain a Wyatt family breakup.
What's that?
They never did explain why the Wyatt family split, so it would be nice to have some sort of closure. And maybe they go that route for WrestleMania. Who knows?
Maybe. I would like to have seen a Shield triple threat at Mania, but I guess a Wyatt family triple threat would be a suitable replacement.
Well, as we were talking about, kind of leading up toward the end there, Kane and Big Show started knocking people out. Dolph Ziggler, of course, eliminated by the two of them. A couple of other guys tossed out. Leading us to the four men in the ring of Kane and the Big Show versus Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, a Shield reunion of sorts against what were Kane and the Big Show's tag team? Now I don't remember what they called them as a tag team, if they even had a name.
I don't think they had a name.
Yeah, but they and again, this comes down to just me being picky. I think I would have rather seen. I get why they did it because of the whole authority thing, but I would have rather seen some more younger, fresher talent, or, you know, whether it had been Dolph Ziggler still at the end there and, you know, Bray Wyatt. I would have rather seen those guys kind of in that final four. I always think of the final four as kind of a coveted position, although it was technically the final five. What did you make of Kane and the Big Show kind of dominating there at the end and getting it down to just to Roman Reigns?
Yeah, like you said, this was all done as part of the storyline that's been going on with the Authority versus, I guess Reigns is included in this, although from what I can recall watching little bits of Raw the past few weeks, I think it would have made more sense for it to be Dolph Ziggler or Ryback or even Rowan. I'm trying to think of what, I guess Reigns has been feuding with Big Show, so that does make sense. But yeah, it was a storyline driven ending. And unfortunately, once it got down to those final four, you kind of had a 99% feeling of where it was going to end up. I don't want to be negative. I think Roman Reigns has a future, but I think he's very much like his cousin, The Rock, who we will probably discuss here shortly, mm-hmm. in that he isn't quite there yet, and I think he needs a little bit more time to fully get a persona that the fans can get behind. I think I was reading something the other day that when the Shield was together, everybody got behind the silent, deadly Roman Reigns. And now that he's cutting these promos, which, based on opinion that I've read, because I haven't really watched that much in the past few weeks to see his promos, the promos are not very good. And I think that's kind of killing the character with the fans' reactions to him. But I don't think this is the right time to put him into the main event at Mania.
I would agree with that, and as we saw last year, and we've seen this happen before, where the Rumble winner doesn't go on to WrestleMania. 1997 comes to mind with Stone Cold Steve Austin winning his first Rumble there and not going to the main event. Vince McMahon, of course, in 99, and then last year they made it a triple threat with Batista and Daniel Bryan along with Randy Orton. So obviously we're 63 days away, or by the time you start listening to this podcast, 62 days away from WrestleMania, so anything really, as they have said before, can happen in the WWE. So yeah. As it stands right now, though, it is seemingly going to be Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. And when Rusev, let's backtrack, take a couple steps back. You know, Kane and Big Show, the bell rings after Reigns eliminates Kane and Big Show. They immediately roll back into the ring and start kicking him down, and The Rock's music hits. Am I imagining things, even with The Rock there, who is arguably one of the most popular WWE superstars of all time, and maybe one of the most popular people on the planet right now, was in the ring with Roman Reigns helping him, the fans just did not seem to still care about Roman Reigns. Am I imagining that?
To be honest, I was on the phone and I had the volume turned down, so I don't know what the reaction was like. Mm-hmm. But I do think that was, you know, that was obviously an attempt to kind of give Reigns the rub from The Rock.
Sure.
Which I don't know if that's going to work, because I don't know how to explain it, but I don't think The Rock can just come in, help somebody fight off their opponent and give them a rub. Like, it's not the same as if Reigns and The Rock were fighting and Reigns beat him.
Right.
I don't think just standing in the ring is going to do that much to help Reigns. And I think, like you said, The Rock is one of the most popular WWE wrestlers of all time, who is very charismatic and entertaining on the mic. So, which is the exact opposite of what Reigns is right now. And it just may actually backfire and highlight how much more seasoning Reigns needs to be that person that WWE wants him to be.
Yeah. It was nearly 20 years ago that The Rock debuted, and very similarly to Roman Reigns, he kind of got that, you know, that whole die, Rocky, die thing going, which... You know, they worked with it, and they made it work for The Rock, and obviously the rest is history. I see us kind of traveling down that same road right now with Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but I think the problem, and this is another topic that we can spend an entire other podcast on, is during that time with Rock, when during the Attitude Era, is they were still letting guys kind of be themselves and show their own personality. And now everything is so scripted,
mm-hmm.
that is Reigns even going to have the chance to show himself? Or is it going to be just more go out, here's a paragraph, say this, and even though nothing in here is anything you would normally say on your own, but make it work? And with the exception of The Rock and, I guess, Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura, wrestlers aren't actors.
Right.
Very few, The Miz as well. So very few wrestlers can actually take...
I hope you air-quoted The Miz. just kidding, Miz. Love you, buddy.
Very few wrestlers can take that and make it sound natural. And I think it's something that I don't understand why everything is so scripted now. Part of it does, but I look back at history and I think, why can't you see that all the good personalities were people that were allowed to express themselves? But I think we get off topic here. I think Reigns, I don't think The Rock, and I also, this may just be my negative reaction to The Rock, but I think The Rock over the last few appearances has not done much to elevate anything in WWE. You know, his matches mm-hmm. with Cena didn't really do anything. Last time he was on Raw, he made fun of Rusev and Lana, which is something I completely don't understand, burying new talent, no matter how humorous or whatever it is. I think you have to focus on your next generation and make them look like stars, not chumps. I don't think, personally, I don't think The Rock is going to get anybody over in his current usage.
Okay. Two more points I want to hit, and then we'll go home with this. The first one being, you know, they're trying to build Roman Reigns as this, or as seemingly trying to build him up as the top face for the company, the baby face, that is. Putting him into WrestleMania, though, against Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was cheered louder than Cena, louder than Seth Rollins at the Rumble. And then they made him, you know, when he went down and they made him look weak, and then he came back, you know, even stronger, that crowd was on fire. So do we almost see a role reversal going into this match at WrestleMania? Will Brock Lesnar be the face and Roman Reigns be the heel?
I don't know. There are two facts that I would apply to this. One, the show took place in Philadelphia, which is notorious for its fans.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be the anomaly or whatever you had said earlier about JBL, a unique crowd,
yeah.
if you will. And I also think if the rumors are true, if Brock is heading back to UFC, or even if WrestleMania is his last appearance, if word of that gets out beforehand, much like it did at WrestleMania 20 when he faced Goldberg, I have a feeling the WrestleMania 31 crowd could be like the WrestleMania 20 crowd was for Brock and Goldberg, because if Brock's leaving, the crowd is going to know about it and could be very hostile. And then if Brock leaves, then that means Roman Reigns will, you know, would logically win the title, because you don't want the title on Brock if he's leaving. And if that's the case, then I think Reigns is going to look like a kind of paper champion that only won because Brock's leaving. And so I think the crowd could be very, you know, hostile towards that. And then do you have, if that's the case, do you have Seth Rollins cash in at the end and kind of set up a Rollins-Reigns feud over the summer?
Interesting idea. I hadn't thought of it that way. Final topic, final question for you, and final discussion we'll have. It's happening right now, or it just happened on WWE Network. Again, we are recording this right after the Royal Rumble. Something that I blogged about over on my 123 Cents that I was afraid was going to happen appears to be happening, where they are setting up a John Cena versus Rusev feud, looking like it may come to a head at WrestleMania. If they end the streak with Cena ending it, my opinion here is that I still stand by it. That is bad for business. I know some have argued that, you know, having these guys lose to a more established star gives them a better rub at the end of the day. More times than not, though, I've seen that not happen with guys. So I think that losing to a guy like John Cena for Rusev is a dangerous, dangerous position for him to be in right now.
Yeah, well, it all depends on the follow-up. You know, a loss is not necessarily a bad thing. It's how you, what happens after that loss. If then they do another rematch and Cena wins again. Personally, I think if they go that route, Rusev should win, and I would keep Rusev undefeated going into WrestleMania 32, and, you know, have him in that potential title match at 32. And just build up another unstoppable force. And then that way, whoever beats him after that is going to get a hopeful push and rub off of finally ending the streak. But I think Cena, you know, as we mentioned earlier, Cena has been the face of the company longer than any other superstar. And I think the time has come for him to be put into a role where he helps get established talent over. You can look back at WrestleMania 30, where he took on Bray Wyatt and won, and then look at the tailspin that Bray kind of went in over the summer. Like, they're just now kind of getting Bray back to the level that he was before WrestleMania. So, yeah, I think having Cena beat Rusev would be the wrong decision, but it's not a unsolvable decision should they go that way.
Okay, that's a fair assessment. That makes sense. Well, Chad, thank you so much for staying up. Well, I guess it's not late so much and parts unknown, but here in the Midwest, it's getting up to be my bedtime. I am fortunately off work, so I can stay up a little later and record this podcast and watch the Royal Rumble. What letter grade would you give the show?
I'd probably go with a B-, just because, like we said, the three matches on the undercard, the tag title match, the New Age Outlaws Ascension match, and the Divas tag match, there was really nothing there that was memorable or will probably be. I'm sure on Raw we'll get another rematch between the Usos and Mizdow, because it looks like Mizdow is about to be on the outs, so you got to have that match where they break up. The title match, as we've mentioned, was an early match of the year candidate, and then the Rumble itself, the first half was really good, second half was mediocre to plodding. So I would go B-, but if the title match and the Rumble itself were actually worth watches. So,
fair assessment. I was also thinking B- in my grading scale as well. So, fans, friends, folks who are listening, whether you stumbled upon us on accident or you come back week after week, we appreciate it. Again, we are located at jitterymonkey.com or at iTunes. Just look for My 123 Cents, the podcast. And Greg Mahochko, thank you so much for all you've done to get this show on the air. And be sure to check out the other fine shows at jitterymonkey.com. For Chad Smart, I'm Kevin Huntsperger. Thanks for listening.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.